and welcome to the Farmers I Know podcast. I'm Carolyn Hirshon. This is the show dedicated to conversations with the people that are growing food to nourish their communities. The farmers I know let their values on how the earth and people should be treated lead the way. On today's episode, I'm speaking with Ashley Johnson Geis, the founder of Brown Girl Farms in Hayward, California. Ashley is driven by her love for the environment and the potential of this intentional space being created on the farm that brings her family and community together. As a Black queer woman in the farming world, Ashley is keenly aware that her very existence in the space is a radical act.
Yeah, this is a spot right here.
This is a spot. Yeah. We have our farm dog, Journey, who's inside. She'll hang out with her around here and just kind of watch over everything.
Sweet.
Yeah.
How much land do you guys have here?
So we have, and the total, including the house too, is about 1.27 acres.
Cool.
And so, you know, the way that the previous owner had the fruit trees planted and everything, we really utilize things from all around the, you know, farm and house, which is really cool because we'll find ourselves like on the actual farm field, but then, you know, maybe in the front driveway harvesting things, or, you know, harvesting the plums.
So you grow things everywhere.
Everywhere. And it's
all
just,
over the place.
Yeah, it's, I mean, right above us here, these are persimmon trees.
Oh, amazing.
And they're delicious.
Are all those little things going to be persimmons?
All those little things are going to be persimmons.
Wow,
I know.
That's,
can you believe
so
it?
Many.
And that, so that's actually, yeah, you can actually see, so that was like the flower, and then you can see the little baby persimmon growing out of what then becomes the top of the persimmon.
Wow.
Which is so cool.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So few people get to see that like full life cycle of things.
It's,
you know,
so true.
It makes a big difference on how you see your food and what you're eating. You know?
It really does. I mean, it's the fact that we're following everything from the time, you know, we either plant the seed or, you know, put something out in the ground all the way to the harvest is just, there's this different level of care, I feel like, you know, and this different level of, like, nurturing that happens. Like, okay, I'm going to place you gently in the box, you know, to then pack up and deliver to the member. Just because it's, like, it's, you've, like, built this whole life with the thing, you know, tending to it.
It's, like, magical.
Yeah, it really is. It really, really is.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So, how long have you been farming for?
That's a good question. Really, my background with farming started in education as well.
Oh,
so
cool.
I started out as an AmeriCorps member.
Oh, nice.
And I ended up working in farm education my first year at a school farm. And that really led me to be like immersed in farming in a way, kind of like you were talking about. It's like every day it was like, okay, this thing needs to happen. We need to like harvest the apples, or we need to turn the compost. And through being sort of a guide for youth, it just like, I found myself very quickly picking up skills and, you know, having to sort of repeat things back to then a younger age group. And it was middle school. So that was really amazing because middle schoolers are definitely a tough age. And there were a lot of things where they're like, compost? Ew, what?
Yeah.
You know? And I was like, okay, the entry level to farming for them a lot of times looks like having nothing to do with farming. It's like, let's talk about this song, or let's talk about, like, you know, this thing going on in the world, and then backdoor of like, all right, now compost, you know? Or like, let's play some music. And what music do you want to play? Okay, you be DJ. And then we're going to also turn this compost pile, you know?
That's smart.
I just fell in love with working with the land and farming, you know, through working with youth, specifically middle schoolers. I think seeing what the land could do and did do in their lives, because a lot of healing happened, like a lot of like them getting a chance to take care of something like the chickens, you know. It really just, that passion grew for me, you know, and being able to bear witness of things that I feel like are inside of all of us in terms of tending to the land being unlocked and giving them a platform to unlock that, you know. And I feel like similarly with me with farming, you know, being Black and being queer, like I feel like that was sort of like the catalyst, but especially for us Black folks, our legacy is farming, you know, and agriculture. And so I believe that we all like have seeds inside of us that are waiting to be tended to if we so choose, you know. I believe in like that's our legacy as people. And so very much so as I, you know, was farming at the school farm and now farming here, I very much feel my ancestors with me, and even some that I don't even know, you know. I still feel that closest, and I find myself wondering, who am I connected to right now? I know some of the farmers in my family, but there's so many obviously going back to the plantation and slavery, even before that, you know, that like lineage. And so it's just like this very spiritual like practice for me.
That's beautiful.
Yeah, yeah.
And I've heard that a lot, mm-hmm. because like part of this is also to kind of help people understand that farmers aren't one thing. Mm. They're mm-hmm. many things. And so often, I mean, I know when I was a kid, if you said like, oh, picture a farm in your head, be like a 55-year-old white man. Right. That would be it. Like, yeah. I would not, yeah. there, nothing else would come
right.
to mind.
Right.
And that sort of, you know, over time evolved for me because I got so into agriculture and I lived with an indigenous family and like, you know, they were really the keepers of all of that mm-hmm. farming knowledge for me in my eyes mm-hmm. as a young person. So that definitely evolved through my experiences, but not everyone learning farming right. that through right. that lens, you know what I mean? So I do wonder sometimes if that's still the pervasive mm-hmm. idea of what a farmer is. Mm-hmm. And I think people are starting to realize it more and more.
Yeah, yeah. I think too, the more, you know, that Black and Brown folks are having these platforms, you know, to like tell our stories and to be able to really set the record straight. And I think it wasn't by any, you know, surprise, like it wasn't a coincidence that, yeah, when folks think of farmers, it's like a straight white male, like the system was designed and actually kept us out, you know, in order to paint that picture, but then also preserve that picture. And so I feel really just humbled and really grateful and excited to be able to very much break that narrative, be like, here I am, Black, queer, you know, like farmer, because very much so, anywhere I go, you know, in the farming world, I feel like I am this force that people turn their heads and they're like, oh, wait, you're a farmer? I feel like it's a radical act just to even be present. And I think there's both, that really like fills my soul, and then it also can be really exhausting.
You know, even if you like, you don't even want to engage in like the social justice part of that, it's like, it's still such a radical thing. And I think it's also important because there's so much generational trauma that the more they can see other people overcoming that, the more they're like, oh wait, maybe these wide open spaces can be for me. You know what I mean? Then maybe there's a place for me to do that as well.
Right. And like you said, through seeing that representation, I think is so important because, you know, I think especially like in the environmental and outdoor ed world, it's one thing for those experiences to be brought to Black and Brown folks into communities, but then, you know, we have to talk about who is bringing those experiences to folks and what do they look like, and the real importance that it is someone that not only looks like them, but then also shares in different experiences and backgrounds,
yeah.
you know, did they grow up there? And I think also, you know, there's a larger conversation of, you know, Black and Brown folks, you know, us all coming together and as we do and really talking about like, you know, this land is ours. And I feel like that involves white people giving space to really not only have the conversation, but then put into action, like reparations need to happen because this land, you know, this land, first of all, is indigenous land, you know, and then also, you know, as Black folks, we were stolen and brought here. So, I think a lot of times the conversation is around, you know, like Black and Brown people reconnecting to the land and, you know, building back the relationship and healing traumas and all those things I think are really true and necessary. And also, I feel like for white folks, the conversation and action around reparations and, you know, giving up land mm-hmm. and helping to, you know, create land access is really, really important, you know.
Yeah. It's been really interesting to learn all about it and think through how it can be done in different ways and like just the imagination that can come with like how we can get more like community ownership of land and
so
access to resources in a way that like the community control it together.
That's right.
And just the variety of ways that reparations can look. I feel like some people are just like, well, how does that work? And it's like, well, let's explore a few
yeah,
different ways
yeah.
in which it can.
Exactly,
like,
exactly.
Let's
I mean,
talk about it. Let's figure it out.
That's exactly right. And I feel so grateful to, you know, like to, for my wife and I to have this farm and to have this house and, you know, for me, just personally, you know, I'm very humbled by as a Black person to, you know, say that I have, and then be able to, you know, honor family and honor our legacy through this farm. You know, I knew where my heart was at in terms of, and my wife too, like what we wanted to do with the land that we purchased.
Yeah, that's awesome. So I'd love to learn a little bit more about your own personal journey with reconnecting with the land. Like, what was it like in your family and in growing up? Did you feel a connection to the environment? Like, what sort of environment did you grow up in?
Yeah, so we grew up here in the Bay Area, but then when I got into eighth grade, we actually picked up and moved to New Jersey. My mom had a 5-year job assignment out there. And so we knew we were going to move out there and then, you know, come back to California. So I'm really grateful to, like, be, you know, bi-coastal in that way. Even though as, like, a middle schooler, high schooler, I didn't have that, like, farming lens yet. I wish I had, because now I'm like, what was that farm that I passed as a kid in Jersey? I don't remember, you know?
Yeah.
But very much so, like, the family that I grew up in, I was really connected to nature from a young age. Like, it was something that was just inherently, like, inside of me. My grandmother, who actually, she works on the farm on Fridays,
which is
so amazing, a whole nother topic. But my gran, she tells this story that when I was, like, a preschooler, we were walking in the parking lot and there was a snail that had clearly been run over. And I wanted to, like, pick it up and save it and build a little habitat. And all along, she knew the snail was dead. But she just, like, creating that platform for me to, like, foster this sense of nurturing, you know. I just am so grateful to her and to my parents. So, you know, she, like, we got a shoebox and we put grass and I would watch a snail every day. And just allowing me to go through that process of, yeah, like, seeing that inside of me, you know. And similar with my parents. I was just always outside. I love to, like, catch bees and, you know, I feel like I connected with the land and animals in a different way, even if it was present as a kid. My parents really, like, fostered inside of my brother and I this sense of, like, wonderment, you know, for the land, and we traveled a lot, so I fortunately got to see both a lot of this country and then also globally. I was able to travel. My mom's work took us to just amazing places. You know, one of the family trips that, you know, stands out to me is we got to travel to Shanghai. Oh, wow. And just being able to see, being so far away from home, you know, but then being able to just experience different cultures and different backgrounds and faiths, especially as a Black woman, or, you know, then a Black child and youth, it left an impression on me for sure.
That's so, yeah, interesting. So you kind of always had that feeling of just, like, connection to the earth and connection to the environment.
I really did. And then, you know, as I got older and sort of had some more autonomy and, like, you know, I majored in environmental studies, and so the science aspect of it appealed less to me than the, like, community engagement and, like, teaching aspect with youth. And so I ended up interning at the San Francisco Zoo.
Oh, nice.
For a while, and then I ended up getting, you know, a job there and did work with, like, behind the scenes, like, education, and getting to take, like, youth and families around to, like, behind the scenes with the animals. And so, you know, I just built up, like, this passion, but really it was always inside of me, you know. And then these different things were kind of like the catalyst, and I just see them as, like, stepping stones, like, okay, the animal shelter, then, you know, the zoo, and each time more and more that community, you know, sort of aspect of it grew deeper inside of me.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
And then as far as, like, thinking through your connection to land and also, like, as a farmer, what role do you think farmers have as far as, you know, being environmental stewards? I guess I'll start with that one, and then I might ask you about the social justice side of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I very much, I think that we have a huge role, and I think that for me as a Black farmer and Black and brown folks farming, you know, our history and our legacy, there really isn't that separation. I feel like in indigenous, you know, cultures and black and brown cultures, there's very much, and I feel, this relationship. So I could never imagine myself farming here in a way that is not first and foremost thinking about my relationship with the land and how am I existing here and what are the actions that I'm doing in terms of farming and how are they impacting the land. I think that for me personally, I'm constantly, like, it's a relationship. And so I think about in a relationship, it's a two-way street, you know? And so that's just really on my mind, you know, when I'm harvesting a plant or, you know, a vegetable, or when I'm doing like a complete, you know, pull out of a crop, I'm very much like giving gratitude and thanking that plant, thanking that tree for what it's providing. It feels just like natural, and it would feel wrong to not do so. And so, yeah, I think us as farmers and working so close to the land, like, we have a huge responsibility, because I feel like something like spiritual is happening. It's a relationship. So I feel like you want to treat the land right. Also recognizing that doesn't always happen, you know?
Totally. Yeah. And then what opportunities do you think there are as a farmer to play a role in, like, being proactive in social justice mm-hmm. issues? Mm-hmm.
Well, I mean, I think it's huge that we're, you know, like a black-owned farm. I mean, just growing, having access to this land, growing food, and then very much our farm is in service to, you know, the black community, brown community members, queer folks. You know, that is a radical act. Like, you know, we own this land, and yes, there's permitting and there's licensing and all sorts of things, and at the end of the day, you know, we are getting to, like, create this food system that is part of this larger community that we're building, you know, that is just so beautiful. I mean, in the amount of time that my wife and I have started the farm, the amount of community that has just come with us on this journey is amazing. And, you know, we're linking up with different chefs, and you know, our beehive was gifted to us by a beekeeper in Merced, Happy Organic. So we're now linked to, you know, her farm and her work. You know, just, it's really powerful. And I think that there's something about when you are growing food and sharing food. You know, our produce boxes also include something called Soul in Your Bowl cards. And mm-hmm. there are these cards that my dad actually came up with the name. He's so funny. He was like, you should have a farm commercial. And he was just joking, but he was like, come on down to Brown Girl Farms where we put soul in your bowl. And I was like, I'm going to use that one day. And so I was really thinking about, you know, feeding people is one thing, but then also giving folks this immersive experience in which to gather around the food that we've grown and provide to them in their boxes is another thing, because I feel like healing happens when you gather around a meal. Healing happens when you're in the kitchen cooking. And so these cards, each week they go out and they have a quote from usually a black leader in the food movement or just in many movements, and then it also has a prompt. So last week talked about self-identity and, like, what does that mean to you? And so I really just feel like, you know, there's something just so powerful about growing food and then sort of how we've extended up to really thinking about the table.
Wow, that's amazing.
Yeah.
And I love that too, because it's like there is this thing about farming that's very meticulous. It can be monotonous. It can be just tiring. It can be like the same thing. And I feel like what you're doing with those cards in some ways is also like very meta and like zoomed out and just like, yeah, there's food in this box, but it's also, look at this card. And when you read it, it's like, this is actually, this cucumber is part of a movement. It might not feel like that when you're chopping it, but it's almost like a constant reminder that even these tiny small things, when you add them all up, is everything, you know?
It's so true, and I think we're really trying to send that message of we care about you, you know? Like, we care about you through the food we've grown for you, but also through, we care about your experience with it, you know?
Yeah.
And kind of, and to say, like, you matter. And I think that that's a radical act in itself when the world, everything, you know, is constantly telling, especially us Black folks, like, you don't matter. And I just feel, you know, I get emotional talking about it because I feel like being able to provide that, that radical act of love and healing. I just feel super humble and grateful, you know, to be able to have the farm to do that.
That's beautiful. Yeah. I love that. I probably should ask this question in the beginning, but I'm just thinking of it now. How did you come up with the name Brown Girl Farms? Mm. Like, how did that originate?
Yeah, it's so funny. I cannot lay claim to it. My mother actually came up with it. She manifested the name. And she, you know, when I was working in farm education, and kind of when I got more serious with farming, she was like, you're going to have your own farm one day, and it's going to be called Brown Girl Farms. And, you know, when she came up with the name, she, you know, she really talked about how the name is, it really gets to the point. You really, Brown Girl Farms, you know, like, it's not a white girl. It's like, it really much is out there, you know? And, you know, she just really talked about how, young women and girls and youth having myself and others that work at the farm to look up to, of like you mentioned, this is what a farmer can and does look like, is huge. And then it's also kind of like, you know, it's like Brown Girl Farms, but then also like a Brown Girl Farms, to really be like, to say, we are here, we've been here, we are doing this, you know. So very much like it's a play on the action too, you know.
I love that. I love that. That's so great. And I love how active your entire family is in this whole thing. I think that's so amazing.
Yeah, well, that is just, that is at the center of my heart, to such a gift to have my family here, you know, and being such a present role. And yeah, like I mentioned, my grandmother works here on Fridays. She is well into her 70s, and she lives out in Tracy. She drives herself still. She drives herself here, and she's the one who is behind the scenes making our flower bouquets that go to market. And
so she
wanders the field of flowers, picking flowers, and she arranges them and makes bouquets. And there's something about when your family is involved, these stories and narratives will be preserved, because we're having conversation, you know, it's eliciting memories. So I feel a sense of responsibility to make sure these stories continue on.
I'm also wondering, because a lot of this is also to help people really understand the realities of being a farmer, because I also find that there's a lot of romanticizing what it's like. And I think in a lot of ways, it is like that. Like, that is true. Like, there are some days where you go out there and you're like, this is a dream.
Right.
I am like in a Disney movie and I'm skipping around and the
sun is setting.
And there are days when you're like,
absolutely,
this sucks.
Absolutely.
Like, this is terrible. I'm hot. Like, this will never get done. I messed this up, or like whatever. So I'm wondering what sort of either barriers or challenges or moments like that that you had in your journey.
Mm-hmm. So many moments. There's so many times that I am like physically, mentally, emotionally exhausted. There are so many times where I'm struggling, especially our home is here at the farm, to like create that separation, because only I could do it. I mean, the fact that we're living where we also tend to the land, I could be out here all the time, and it's actually a practice for me to even intentionally rest here, you know. So I recently strung up a hammock down there, you can kind of see it in the orchard, and I was like, I'm going to rest here, you know, like I'm going to create a space where I rest, because it can be so tiring. And there's also the real pressure of time. Like, timing is everything. And so then when you're like, okay, it's constantly having to make both calculated decisions, but also decisions from the heart of like, I need to rest today. I need to come off the farm a little bit early. Like, my body won't keep going if I don't give it this, you know? I think also too, I've thought a lot about, like, what does it mean to be in the present? Because I feel like as farmers, we're having to plan months and months out. You know, like, I'm already thinking about winter squash. And it's like, what? Yeah. You know, and so there's something that happens when you are constantly in the future. And so it's like a practice of being, you know, what's going to bring me back to the present? Okay, what do I know is occurring right now? Well, I see the chickens in the nesting box, you know, or that's the present. You know, I feel like it's such a practice.
Absolutely. Thank you so much for that answer.
Yeah.
And I would love to go on a little walk with you and check out some of what you got growing.
So much going on here.
Oh, I'm excited. Okay, cool.
So this is our farm field here. So
beautiful.
This was the first part that we tilled, and everything is kind of servicing the CSA program right now for the spring. In this bed, these are sweet potatoes. I'm very proud of them. They do not look like much, but these are them right in here.
Amazing.
And so we're gonna do a couple of beds of sweet potatoes. We just put them in. This is called a sweet potato slip. So you can actually take like cuttings from the sweet potato plants, and actually that cutting will then root and become a whole new plant.
Whoa.
So a lot of people start it by what's called the potato seed, so like a part of this actual sweet potato, but this is another way that you can start your potato or sweet potato plants. And so we're trying that out this year.
Nice.
They're starting to leaf out here.
Oh yeah, look at that. There you go.
They don't look like much now, but
just wait,
right?
Yeah, very cool. What other kinds of stuff do you grow?
Yeah, so we focus a lot, and it's, you know, it's something that many folks hear us say, like really honoring and highlighting like African American heritage crops. So
oh, cool.
We do a lot of mustard greens, different couple varieties of collard greens. We do a lot of intercropping and companion planting here. So doing things like beans and tomatoes, like the beans help to fix nitrogen into the ground, which the tomatoes benefit from for, you know, plant development. And then we also have like basil growing with the tomatoes next door. Yeah, we can walk through the hoop house.
I love that.
One of my favorite spots. All the baby plants.
They're so cute.
They really are.
What's cuter than a baby plant?
Right?
Like, oh my gosh, it isn't even, I almost fell on your plants.
I'm like, they're so cute!
Let me just dive on top of them.
Oh my gosh, yeah, they're all so, yeah, they're doing their thing right now. Like, I love the lettuces. I'm just like, y'all are
they're
super
beautiful.
Cute. Yeah. We try to do really fun varieties of things. So there's like this like speckled lettuce variety here.
Cool.
Called a speckled trout back. And it's just, I'm like, nature is so pretty.
It's amazing how beautiful it is. And the last thing I want to ask you is about your hopes for the future of your farm. And it can be like your hopes for the future of this farm or for the food system or really anything, just like what you're looking to next that brings you hope and joy.
That's a really good question. You know, I'm really looking forward to in the future creating a way for community to be able to be here. You know, whether that's through education programs, you know, taking my teaching background and eventually having ways that both youth and adults, because education is always, you know, can learn from the farm. You know, I'd love to be able to host classes and also invite other facilitators, and recognizing like I'm not a keeper of knowledge, you know, and I want to learn more too. So I you know, I really look to the future and time of being able to, you know, invite community here, because we've been getting a lot of wonderful inquiries, and I'm also just like, I'm looking forward to intentionally sitting down and thinking about ways, what are ways that community can actually engage with our space.
Awesome. Yeah. Thank you for that.
There are so many ways that you can be a part of the Brown Girl Farms community. If you're in the Bay Area, there's still time to sign up for their CSA program that starts at the end of April, including their new flower CSA program. If you want to support from afar, or are just interested in learning more, you can check out their website, browngirlfarms.com. Next time on The Farmers I Know, I'll be in New Mexico, speaking with Rihanna Bentia over at Chispa Farms about how a love for the environment and a high school agroecology class inspired her to pursue farming. Don't forget to give the show some love by rating and subscribing, and sharing with your friends. Follow along on The Farmers I Know journey on Instagram, @TheFarmersIKnow. Thank you so much for listening.